This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 40% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
11 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. You guys can always hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. We'll get to the trash of the day in about 17 minutes. Here on the show, we ran out of time yesterday, didn't get to it. I want to get to the trash that is just an interesting way that I guess we're gonna allow this to happen. It's not something any of us would have said probably like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, something like that. But it's a thing. It's a thing anybody can do.
We'll
now.
See.
So we'll get to that in just a bit. But I want to talk about the AL Central. We know the Royals made the playoffs last year. Three teams from the AL Central made it. They all beat up on the Chicago White Sox. Who's the team that threatens the Royals' chance at winning the AL Central the most? Now, I can just tell you the odds at FanDuel, at least. It
They're
is
really
a close division. It makes sense.
Other than the White Sox, who are a joke.
Yeah, you can bet $10 and win $2,800 if you want to throw away $10 on the White Sox to win the AL Central. You can do that. You can. But
what if they want it?
That's right. The Twins are plus +220 to win the Central. The Tigers plus +230, the Guardians plus +290, and the Royals are at +310. So the Royals have the fourth best odds to win the division, which normally we'd be like, well, that sucks.
But they're even odds.
But they're so close. The gap is so close. So who do you think, if your answer, maybe you do think the Royals are winning the division. We'll give our official picks and everything on Thursday, opening day. But who's the biggest threat to that? Because I think we know what some of these teams were last year, and then you got to look at the offseason. It is very fair to say the Royals did have the best offseason of anybody in the division. They did.
Yeah, I think that's fairly obvious.
You look at the areas they addressed. It doesn't mean there aren't holes, but some other teams in the division really just stood pat. Like the Tigers, if they would have got the big swing to come through and
get Alex Bregman,
that's a different conversation. They didn't. I still think the answer is the Tigers, though, despite not doing much because of their rotation. They had one of the best pitchers, the best pitcher in the American League last year.
Favorite in the American
League
again.
So, so when you have a pitcher like that dominant, plus some other young talent that came up at times last year in the lineup, I will say that the Tigers are still the biggest threat to the Royals in the division. I don't trust the Twins staying healthy. Royce Lewis is already hurt.
Yeah.
And the Guardians, they brought back Carlos Santana, and Shane Bieber will get back after being hurt. That'll help them. Last year, he got hurt very early on in the season, right? I think it's the Tigers and the Royals.
I do not like, and this makes no sense because they won 92 games last year. I don't like the Guardians rotation, even with Bieber. I don't like the Guardians lineup. The bullpen's great. I'm not here to make an argument for that. They're
Class A is ridiculous.
Very, 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 very good out of the bullpen. I think it's the Twins. Even with Royce Lewis, One is just like history. The Twins every couple of years just be like, they don't have any business winning and win. It's what I want the Royals to be. The team that you're like, this can't be the year for them. You know, how could it possibly be? They were only four games back in the division last year. I think the Guardians, like you, are the team that come back a little bit versus, you know, to the rest of the class versus where they were previously. And I'm with you. The Tigers needed some help. The Tigers also exceeded, but let's not pretend like the Royals were the only team in the Central who exceeded expectations last year. The Tigers, maybe even more so, because they didn't have, like, they had Skubal, but they didn't have the lineup that looked like it was ready to go. I don't think they got any better in their bullpen. I don't think they got any better in their starting rotation. It's still good because they've got Skubal, but I didn't see them make any kind of real change. The Twins, I think, still have guys who I think can, like, be great again, right? Like, the Carlos Correa signing is still there. And some of these guys who were coming off years, that it's not hard to see. I look at their starting rotation. I don't think it's hard to see success there. And specifically because they've been so good against the Royals over the last couple of years. But I get why that might not be someone's choice. If you made me guess, I'd say the Twins are the biggest challenge. It's going to end up being the Guardian somehow because neither of us are believers in them. But
yeah, no, that's usually how that thing works out. My question, kind of how we've talked about the outfield here in Kansas City, like, do they have enough pop? And will they have to position themselves to make a move in season to go swing for a bat? I think that the Twins are in that same spot, Cody. I worry, if I were a Twins fan, about replacing some of the production of Santana and Kepler and that lineup, and are they going to have to make a move midseason? And that's fine. Teams do it all the time, but like that would be a concern. They also, much like the Tigers, who were flirting with Bregman, they were flirting with Pablo Lopez, and Christian Vasquez, and some other pieces, and nothing happened on trades involving those players. So the odds are close for a reason, though. I mean, this is really competitive. I don't know if we're going to see three teams come out of the AL Central again. The White Sox are not going to be good, but I also think they will not be historically bad to the point where everybody is just, what were the Royals, 14-1 or something like that against them? I don't know if that's happening again. Probably not. Let's just be real.
Are we sure? And so, they're pretty stinky still.
Look, our social media crew, our guy Kramer had us record some today. It'll be on social media tomorrow, I think, or on opening day. They were asking us our win total, and we'll do it on opening day. I don't want to spoil it, but I'll be honest, like, my win total was pretty aggressive for this club. He told me what yours was. Also, we weren't very far off. We didn't have the same number. We weren't far off, though. So we both have the same kind of view of what we think this Royals team is going to be. And I think the Tigers would be the biggest threat. Now they open up with the Guardians right away, so we'll get a first look at them immediately on opening day, and we'll kind of see what the Guardians have in store.
Right now, the AL Central over at FanGraphs only have one team with a better than 50% chance of making the playoffs, according to their metrics, preseason metrics. You know, this is like an AP preseason top 25 poll in a lot of ways, because yeah, they don't even know who's going to be hurt, who's going to play, what to like about these teams, if someone stinks, whatever. The Twins at 55.2%. They have three teams in the AL West with a better than 50% chance to make the postseason, and then pretty much giving no chance to the Athletics and Angels. And then they have two teams in the AL East with a better than 50% chance. They put the Orioles in the same boat as essentially the Royals. That, like, 45, like, it's 50-50, but we're not siding on the side of the 50, if that makes sense. And so I don't think it's crazy to think that this division might very well end up being back to my fear is that it goes back to a one division league.
Hopefully not.
And that 91's got to get it done, or 93's got to get it done. And you better be the team. Last year, 92 was the number for the Guardians. You better be the team who gets the numbers where they need to go, because we know the AL East is tough. And, the AL West should be tough again between the Mariners, Rangers, and Astros. And so, are there enough spots for a three bid out of the AL Central? Seems hard.
The great news, as we all know, the Royals are in the American League. Not just the AL Central, they're in the American League. And that is crucial in this whole conversation. When we look on the NL, we all know about the Dodgers and what they're doing, and the Braves, for example. Oof. You're competing in the AL. There's question marks around,
and in the worst division in the American League. Lowest win
most
total.
Competitive. Yeah, most competitive, balanced, if you will. Similar payrolls for the most part. Whereas you look at the AL East, it's a little bit different. I look across the AL, though, and the good news for all these teams in the American League Central is there's questions around everybody. Like the Yankees, we've got over that already. Gerrit Cole is done. Luis Gil is out for 3 months.
They
don't have Soto. So is Judge going to be, are they going to pitch around Judge a bunch this year, especially if he's in a hot streak, right? If Judge is in one of those 2 week stretches, nobody's going to pitch to him. Last year, you didn't have much of a choice. You had to. The Boston Red Sox are actually my pick to win the American League East this year. They still have questions, but I like what they did this offseason. They add Crochet. They add Alex Bregman. They have some young prospects. I think a couple of the top prospects in baseball could come up and help that lineup. So the Red Sox are really well positioned. But you keep going through. I mean, the Blue Jays, who knows what to expect there, right? I mean, it's a contract year for Vlad Guerrero Jr. In the American League West, like, what are the Astros now with some new pieces, some pieces that have left? I'm sorry. Can Yordan Alvarez stay healthy? There's, and go on and on, team by team.
Right,
there are questions everywhere. Can Julio Rodriguez fix his swing? They got the starting pitching. Does he have the swing fix to get back to one of the, you know, the top five guys in the American League? There's so many questions around the AL. I don't view it anywhere like the NL, where there's like two or three teams that are clearly just the dominant teams going to run the league.
So FanGraphs, they have their odds on to win the World Series too.
All right.
Here's the percentages for the American League teams. Yankees, 5.9%. Mariners, 4.8%. Twins, 3.8%. They're all in this, this same range, right? Like a 5.9 is the highest they give any American League team. They give the Royals a 2.3% chance. In the NL?
Well, yeah.
FanGraphs projects the Dodgers at a 22.9% chance to win the World Series. Do you hear? I just said the Yankees have 5.9. They're the highest American League team. They put the Dodgers at 22.9. They put the Braves at 15.7. And nobody else is above 6% in the entire National League. They're pretty much telling you it's the Dodgers or the Braves are going to win the World Series. And everyone else is just wasting their time.
Yeah, that's the point, man. It's a great thing you're not in the NL right now. And it's the where baseball is at. It gives you a real chance still. Because of this, the dynamics.
If you get to
leagues.
The World Series, then you just got to get hot for four games, you know?
Nobody's complaining if you get to the World Series. See what happens. You've obviously been playing some great baseball at that point.
I mean, it'd be hard to be like, I'm predicting the Royals to win the World Series.
Yeah.
Like, if you told me right now the Royals in the World Series against the Dodgers, and you're like, all right, Cody, it's game one. Who are you predicting to win the World Series? I'll be honest with you. It's going to be very difficult for me to answer Royals in that scenario.
In case
you
brought it up, in case you're wondering, the Royals are 40-1 to win the World Series.
40-1. Huh?
They
were 30-1 to win the Central last year.
That's right. Think about
that
way.
Central, not,
that's right.
You know,
they are just behind the Guardians at 35-1, the Padres 33-1, D-backs 33-1. Twins 30-1. That's kind of the ballpark that they're in from an odds perspective. The favorites, of course, the Dodgers at +240. The Braves 8-1. Yankees 9-1. Phillies 10-1. Mets 11-1.
Dodgers at 240. Such a ridiculous.
So there was only one AL team in that grouping then in the top five,
and that's the point. Exactly. Yeah, Drew. That's exactly.
It's a
what
wide open American League.
It is anybody's league this year, which should make for a fun 162.
What is the Royals to win the AL then?
Like four. What we just talked about, like 4-1. 3.5
so
to
it's
one.
4-1. Not
No. He's talking the whole league. The Central.
The Central. The American.
15-1. It's half, right? Half of the world's roughly half of the World Series odds. They're 15-1. The Guardians are 14-1. The favorite to win the American League, based off of what
it was, the Yankees, right?
Yankees +390. Okay. Orioles 6.5-1. Red Sox 8-1. Rangers 8-1. Astros 8-1.
The Yankees, by the way, who lost a ton. Why are they the favorite to win the American League?
I'm with you.
Because it's the Yankees.
I think the Red Sox are winning the AL East. That's kind of my team tonight. I won't say surprise. It's not really that bold of a take. I think the Red Sox will win the AL East this year. That's all.
Let's talk a little NCAA tournament. As we know, it's Thursday. We got a couple more days before the tournament kicks back off and the Sweet 16 gets underway. Only one double-digit seed in there. But I think if we ask the majority of fans, they're all going to say the same thing. All right, who's going to win it now? Now that we got the same. I will get answers of the following. Duke. Florida.
Duke again.
Houston.
And Duke again.
Someone will again say Duke, most likely. So I want to, you know, I was trying to think about it as like, okay, if it's not those, right? It's not those. Who is the seed that is three or higher that I think is going to win it? And I've settled in on Kentucky. I don't think Texas Tech is a bad answer. I'm still not a believer in Arizona, even though they did make that come, you know, like they played well against Oregon, were able to come from behind and do it. I'm not saying there, but if I'm choosing a three seed that's still going to get this thing done, I think it's Kentucky. They got Tennessee, a matchup that I think favors them okay. They will then get to another round of either the winner of Houston or Purdue. You and I both think it's going to be Houston. They wouldn't have to face Duke until they got to the Final Four. So maybe you get lucky. Maybe BYU or Alabama or somebody else comes and messes this thing up for you, and you get to wait a little while before you face Duke. That's why I'm never choosing BYU or Alabama or Arizona. You have to face Duke way too soon. And maybe I should have gone on the other side of the bracket. Yeah. But if I'm choosing a 3 seed or higher that can still get it done, that can knock off the Duke or the Floridas or whatever in the world, I'm taking Kentucky. I think that's a team that's getting hot at the right time. They came out of the SEC just the same, and I like their path better than some of the field. Not all of it, but better than some of the field.
If I have to pick a 3 seed or higher, I'll just stick with the original, you know, pre-tournament view on some of these teams.
Oh, you had one of them in the Final Four, or the championship game?
I had Tech as a 3 seed playing Duke in the national title game. I haven't seen anything to suggest that that's not viable.
Good.
Their matchup is against Arkansas instead of St. John's, and I know Arkansas is playing well, but I'll still take that path instead of what I thought it was going to be. Now, they will have to run into most likely Florida unless Maryland beats them. Florida and Maryland are playing on the other side. So the winner of Florida Maryland plays the winner of Tech and Arkansas. So can Texas Tech beat Arkansas, then potentially Florida to get to the Final Four? That's what we're talking about. But that was the path that was necessary before. I'll stick with Tech. They haven't even had one of their better players play yet. Now, I haven't seen the latest update. They've been really quiet about it. I thought he was going to play against Drake, and he didn't. They were fortunate. They didn't need him. Toppin's been ridiculous.
God, why didn't they quadruple team him at one point in that game?
First half, they had no answer for
it. Like, I'm not kidding. They should have legitimately triple teamed him. It'd be better to give someone an open jumper than that.
So I'll go with Tech. I'm also banking on them getting McCollum back. So, yeah, Texas Tech would be my answer. I'll stick with them.
I debated because I didn't want to do the same as you guys. Plus, I debated between Purdue because they're playing in Indianapolis. A little bit of a tough draw for Houston.
I didn't think about that.
A little bit of a tough draw for Houston, who have to go to Indianapolis, which is basically an hour from West Lafayette. I'm going to go with Michigan, though, because I think that, and they've shown over the course of the tournament. They're one of the hotter teams. If they can take care of the ball, they can beat anybody in the country. I think they also have the size to go up against, you know, Jahni Broome. The guard play is the big question for Michigan, where they go up against guard play that's been very good for Auburn. If Michigan can take care of the ball, I think they can go and win the whole thing because they've got Vladislav Golden, they've got Danny Wolf, who's, you know, one of the best players in all of college basketball. They've got a good combination, and then Trey Donaldson's been great as well over the course of the tournament. So I'll say the 5 seed Michigan Wolverines. If they win, we could also get a in-state matchup. If Michigan State beats heavens forgive me, who are they playing? Ole Miss. If they beat Ole Miss, it could play Michigan if they beat Auburn. So that could be a fun little Elite Eight matchup, if you will, depending on how things go. But I'm going to go with the Michigan Wolverines.
Michigan. I mean, we got three. I don't actually think any. Those are probably the three best answers outside the 1-2 line. Look, if you wanted to make an argument for any of the ones or twos, it's pretty easy. We thought it was going to be a chalk field. It's been a chalk field, and pretty much none of those teams have given you, like, great doubt. Maybe Michigan State struggled against Bryant for, like, I don't know.
New Mexico gave him some fits.
New Mexico. So, like,
Tennessee struggled against Wofford for a little bit. And so, it means the same sort of deal.
Yeah, the twos have looked like, not on, like, shaky ground in the sense that, like, I thought that they were definitely going down. But, like, it didn't look as smooth as it looked like for the 1 seeds. But they also weren't, like, they needed a buzzer beater, you know, off the glass at the end of the game in order to do it either to advance. And so, like, as the 2 seeds, they've still been the ones, and 2s have been the most comfortable probably the entire time in this NCAA tournament. It's crazy. Find out Thursday. Get Sweet 16 action.
Trash of the day.
All right, we're pivoting. I lied on one of the trash of the days. I'm not going to do the one that we had in the rundown. I found one new that I think will be more interesting.
Oh, okay.
It's worth it. It's worth it, I promise. We go to China for this one. This is a real story involving a man and his girlfriend. So, in the photo of the story, when you guys get a chance, is incredible.
All right, is it in the rundown? I'll go click.
I'll put a link in there for a second for you guys. A man has required medical attention after getting his girlfriend's hand stuck in his mouth.
What now?
Yeah, let me copy the link in so you can get a photo.
Excuse me.
So yeah, they were one of the more bizarre cases.
Is this what I say? We don't kink shame on this show.
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. What was going on here? You know what? In his mouth. If you look at the photo, literally the photo is just you just see this fist in this dude's mouth. All right, so. Walks in the emergency room, this couple, and apparently had tried to shoot a funny video to post online. in which they tried to see if the woman's hand was small enough to fit in her boyfriend's mouth. She managed to stuff her fist in the mouth just fine, but when she tried to pull it out, his mouth muscles stiffened and the hand became stuck.
No!
After repeatedly trying to pull out her hand from the man's mouth, the young woman decided that they needed medical attention. The photo is just ridiculous.
Yeah,
the
photo's great.
Doctors were obviously baffled by the couple until they heard their story. The woman said that her boyfriend's face gradually turned red and all her efforts to yank her hand free from his mouth was useless. He drooled continuously because he couldn't close his mouth and his throat made a gurgling sound. To make matters worse, his teeth clamped down on her wrist because of the contracted muscles. Quote, saliva ran down my wrist to my elbow, the woman said. It felt like my hand was stuck in a meat grinder. Doctor who was handling the case said the girl's hand got stuck because her boyfriend's jaw muscles had contracted, preventing him from opening his mouth. This created a dangerous cycle. The more pain, the tighter he clenched his jaw.
His jaw was probably killing him. Oh my gosh, I can't imagine.
To solve the problem, the hospital staff first tried to calm the patients and prevent the man from choking or vomiting by playing soothing music.
Oh yeah, that'll fix the there's a fist stuck in my mouth problem.
They then used a special mouth opener to expand his jaw enough to inject a muscle relaxant in a specific area. After about 20 minutes, they gently rotated the girl's wrist, taking advantage of the sliding properties of the jaw joint to finally unjam it.
Oh my God, what a ride over to the hospital that must have been.
How are you driving? By the way, hold on. Do you get
on a subway?
How are you?
Because then you don't have to like be behind the wheel, because you can't drive.
Yeah.
And who's driving? The person with the fist probably in their mouth.
Are you going to lean the seat back?
No, dude, no chance. You got to take a subway.
Or an Uber or
in
something.
China. Like, yeah, you got to, like, because they said it's in China, right?
Imagine pulling like, up with the Uber transit. And you're like, excuse me, like, there's, dude, I don't know what goes through your head in that situation.
At that point, I'm like, I'll tip you whatever the hell it takes to get my ass to the hospital as fast as you can.
Like, they had to inject a muscle relaxer to get his jaw to calm down.
And then pry his mouth open in order to get it. Oh, man, well, that sucks.
If you've ever had lockjaw, then you know like some of the pain, but ultimately you can close your mouth and it's fine. Imagine having that pain.
I've never had lockjaw.
No. Oh, you never had lockjaw?
No.
My brother.
When did you have this? What's the backstory on that?
I mean, the only time that I don't know if it's like something.
Someone was sticking their hand in your mouth?
No. It's like, I think the one time that I've had it, or I've had it a couple of times, you're like eating sour candy. If you have like enough candy and it gets in your gum in the right spot, my jaw is like just completely locked up before. And it's pretty painful. I can't imagine having going for longer than 5 seconds.
My brother was at he called me yesterday because he was at a restaurant.
Okay.
He was like, his kids were on spring break, but being watched for a little bit. They went to go get lunch. And despite any medical training at all, in which he has zero, he gave someone the Heimlich at a restaurant yesterday.
Yeah. What?
Yeah. He said he was sitting in a restaurant, a couple high tops over. He sees the guy's choking, and then he starts like kind of sauntering over is maybe the sound of it, because nobody else was doing anything. He's like, I'm pretty sure this guy's choking. They made eye contact. I was like, do you know how to do the Heimlich? He said, no. Like, the guy didn't ask him, but like, I asked him. He said, no, but he's like, he just gave him like one good tug, piece of steak. Throughout?
Oh, that's going to be a drop now. Oh, my goodness.
Piece of steak flew out, Gold. Everyone went back to it being totally normal after that for a while. Until, like, the manager gave him a free drink. And I guess the guy later paid for his meal. Like, as he came back after. But, like, everyone, he said the entire restaurant went back to, like, normal. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I heard it, but I wanted to finish the story,
too. I know you did. Thank you. For finishing the story.
Oh, man.
That's crazy. Was he saved someone's life? That's awesome.
I mean, I guess so. Guy probably would have died.
Yeah,
probably.
I mean, that's, yeah.
Yeah. So he's getting red in the face. Man. Just randomly giving some guy the Heimlich. Mm. Do you know how to do the Heimlich?
I don't. No. Do you?
No.
Yeah.
I've been training on one of those AED machines before.
Yeah, that's very important. But
he just gave him like one good tug. The sound behind it ruins a good clean cut, you know?
Yeah. You like the little glizzies? I think it's Drew, thank you.
That's
I like a good ballpark hot dog. All right,
that's yeah.
Yeah, yesterday you told us you like the little glizzies.
Who doesn't? Are you going?
I'm not going to cut that from myself. This one though, Drew Cody is going to be saved.
It's already saved. That's fine. I'm prepared for it.
Yeah,
there are a lot over the years.
That's the trash of the day.
Would you have paid for someone's meal if they saved you from choking?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's like bad stuff, right?
You have to.
Yeah. No, no doubt. I mean, that's definitely a circumstance that deserves.
I feel like the restaurant could just be like, that guy didn't die here, so that's good. That's a win.
The restaurant I'll almost could also just, comp the dude's meal that saved somebody. You know, it also would have been bad pub for the restaurant if an ambulance showed up and somebody died because they choked on their food.
I said, like, were you worried about doing, like, what if you had messed it up? What if you, like, now you're like trying to perform the Heimlich, but this guy's slowly dying? That's way worse.
You're actually making it worse by trying, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I guess I don't know if it makes it worse. It's just you're delaying. If there's somebody else in the restaurant that does know how to do it and they think, oh, this guy's got it under control. And
so the manager's like, are you a doctor? So I'm like, no, I'm just like a regular person.
Am I a doctor?
No, I just thought this guy's choking on a piece of steak. I should do something about it. Wild times, man.
Not tender steak, I guess, huh?
Maybe just cut too big of a piece. I don't know.
Yeah. Smaller bites.
I guess, smaller bites. Next time, he'll probably remember that.
All right, up next, Chiefs Red Half Hour. We'll talk more about how the Chiefs might be looking at another team to emulate their offense, and I'm sure we'll find out if another mock draft exists that's out there next.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
All right, it is the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Hope you guys are having a good Tuesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. So we all know the Chiefs offense, for a variety of reasons, never reached the level everybody was hoping it would get to. And it's been a couple of years since the offense reached the level that we once saw. And I'm not even talking about Mahomes' individual numbers. Like, I don't think we're going to see the 50 touchdowns, 5,000 yards thing. I'm not even talking about that. I think we're talking about explosive plays. We're talking about how this offense can get back to being one of the top-tier offenses in football. And the folks over at Arrowhead Pride did a write-up, and they were looking at the roster the Chiefs currently have and comparing it to some other teams. And in particular, one of the best offenses in football the last couple of years.
Last year.
I know the last couple of years they have been, no doubt. And that's the Detroit Lions. And can you emulate something from that? And is it how, from a personnel perspective, can you do that? And I don't. And look, that's a fine roster to look at. It makes sense. I don't even think it's so much as like, hey, we got to do what the Lions are doing, as it is some of the things we've highlighted when we looked at the offseason. Got to get more explosive where? Running back for starters. Well, who do they have? They have Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. Can the Chiefs get an explosive back to go with Pacheco and Kareem Hunt? If they do that, well, that's a huge step forward to making that offense happen.
I looked at all the offenses above them last year. They finished 12th. Denver scored more points.
That's surprising,
on offense last year. Now, part of that is because their defense set them up, but they were a very efficient offense. I've told you they had the league's best offensive line. That's probably part of the reason. Denver and Arizona both scored more points than the Chiefs last year. That should be very concerning to you. Atlanta, who lost their quarterback in part of the year, and Kirk Cousins, who stunk. This is the company you kept. Indianapolis only scored 0.5 points less points per game than you last year. I look at Detroit as mostly just an example of, look, I'm not trying to get back to 33 points a game. That'd be cool. I'm not against that, to be clear. Detroit has a really good offensive line. So maybe that's not the best example. Who's the team on? Because here's the problem. Detroit has a great offensive line. Here's the offense that's better than you. Detroit has a great offensive line. One of the five best in the league last year. Buffalo had one of the five best offensive line. I think they had the best offensive line, or the second best offensive line in the AFC last year, if I was ranking them. Denver, who was ahead of you, had a great offensive line. But like, since he didn't, Washington's was okay. Philly's was great. Right. Okay, fine. Tampa Bay's was okay. They got a great left tackle, which certainly helps. But like, it wasn't like a murderer's row of offensive lines. So you should be able to get back into that top five category, even with offensive line issues. Can we in any way chalk up last year to just they will be more like Detroit? And it was just going back to the trio of wide receivers, that if they had just had all of those guys available day one from the beginning, they would have not finished below Denver.
Well, they would have been 12
points
per game. I mean, I think both feel pretty confidently in saying they would not have been 12. Would they have been top five? I don't know, because the left tackle spot does cause plenty of issues for you. But if last year, or hopefully this year, they have a chunk of the season, a good chunk, a majority of Worthy, Rice, and Brown on the field. Yeah, I think they can very easily just that. And that's what they're banking on, by the way, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, other than drafting a running back, if that happens, there's really no other offensive piece that's going to change anything from where they're at right this second. There's just not. I mean, I guess they could draft a receiver in the third round or something, but like, this
is
the
offense.
Yeah,
but that guy's going to be so far down the immediate option list that it shouldn't matter.
This is the offense for the most part, unless they do draft an explosive back fairly high that can factor in. So their offseason plan, in large part, as we acknowledged yesterday, is that, hey,
running it back.
We think we had the right guys. We just couldn't get them on the field. Now, that's part of the problem, but that is their thought process. Hey, Rice either isn't going to get suspended, or maybe it's 4 to 6 games. We think Rashee Rice is ahead of schedule anyway on his injury. Hollywood Brown, he's healthy now. He gets another full offseason. Xavier Worthy continue to build on his rookie year, right? And so that's what they're banking on. Travis Kelce, maybe he doesn't have the pressure being the guy anymore, but we think we can still utilize him in some really key spots and he's going to still be one of our top weapons in the offense.
Yeah, I just wonder whether or not, and I don't think it's like the worst plan, because if you look at it, the individuals and what they accomplished, Rashee Rice, before he got hurt, looked like he was going to be a 1,400-yard wide receiver, maybe at least 1,200. He was certainly going to be well over 1,000, but somewhere in that range. Like, I had originally, remember, I said he was going to be a 1,100 or 1,200-yard wide receiver. That was looking light at the beginning part of the year. Xavier Worthy, by the time his season ended, he was looking like a 900 to 1,000-yard guy, and he was pacing at that for this whole second half of the season. Hollywood, a little less known. You could take in the factor of his entire career. Let's just call him a 700-800-yard, whatever, 700-yard guy, a nice complimentary third wide receiver, and we don't think Kelce stinks. So, like, he's still a very, very, very good tight end. On paper, this should be one of the more talented offenses in the entire AFC. But it's like, I do think that they have to, this may be the first time I've said this in the entire Patrick Mahomes era, they need to pass less. The thing I like about copying what the Detroit Lions do is get another running back and take, you know, you're like, our offensive line isn't any good. Okay, yeah, but also, you put way too much heat on them last year. Patrick Mahomes accounted for 70% of your offense. The interior is good, but with the tackle play, how are you throwing the ninth most in the NFL last year? They typically throw that much. Last year wasn't the year for it. And so if you get another running back and you are explosive, you don't have to put all this pressure on Jalen Moore to be above average. You can just run it more and solve some of your problems that way. You get light boxes. Everyone's standing 20 yards deep on you because Patrick Mahomes, the quarterback, and all the offensive weapons you have. This is a great year to take advantage and do it more like Detroit, who passed the 25th least last year. And you probably wouldn't even think about that for a team that has Jameson Williams, Amon Ross, St. Brown, like, has talent. But they passed.
Yeah. Almost, I mean, David Montgomery was great for them. Yeah. Jahmyr Gibbs was great for them. They had a good balance. I'll be curious just to see what their offense is like in Detroit without Ben Johnson. You know, they have the same personnel, basically, but from a play-calling perspective, how much has that changed? We know they're also just going to be way aggressive. I mean, the Commanders and Lions were the two most aggressive teams in football last year on fourth down. The Chiefs were not. They were better than they had been in terms of aggressiveness, but they're not anywhere near that level of taking it to a top two, top three, fourth down. Not just conversion percentage, but attempts. And the reason why a team like the Commanders also had a great year with their rookie quarterback is they weren't only going for fourth a ton, their conversion rate was insane. Everybody talks about the Lions and Dan Campbell and how great of a story he is.
They were converting
the
like 70,
Commanders were just as good, if not better at times, than the Lions were at the same fourth down conversation that we had all year.
I think that's why Cliff stayed. I think Cliff thought he could get a better job.
Oh, another year with Jaden Daniels, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know who was like really banging down the door for him this year, but I think he wanted to do what Ben Johnson did, which is, I'd like to pick my spot a little bit more, maybe have an idea. Like, if I'm an offensive coach, I kind of want to know my quarterback.
He could be the head coach of the New York Giants if it fails this year.
Yeah, they take Cam Ward or they take Shedeur Sanders. It doesn't look like a functional offense, and they're like, yeah, you're our guy now. Although I still say, like, if you're doing that, my argument is always, fire your coach now.
Well, of course.
Get him with the offensive guy you want now. I thought it was a huge mistake in Chicago. You don't have to repeat their mistake. This will now be the third offense in 3 years that Caleb Williams is trying to run, and not including college or anything else.
No, in
or including college. You don't have to do. You don't have to do it that way.
A competent organization, the Giants, they would have fired Daboll and the GM this year and then drafted a quarterback. And you're correct that it looks like they're going to be having a regime that gets a rookie quarterback and then they fire him after this year. And that new coach and GM are going to inherit the rookie quarterback. It's weird. I'm not saying the Giants shouldn't draft a rookie quarterback now, but that's the spot they have put themselves in.
Yeah, just consistently. They should take one.
Thinking of the draft, another mock draft sounder here on Cody and Gold. Drew, where are we going this time?
We're going to the Athletic. This is not Dane Brugler.
Trust Dane Brugler, a reliable, well-thought draft expert.
When Dane Brugler comes out with a mock, we will be... reacting to that. But Ben Standig is the one who came up with this one. It's just one round. They they have some trades, but the Chiefs are not involved in a trade this time around, Gold.
Thank you.
He's not anti-trade, Ben. I mean, trades do happen, so.
Sure.
Correct. This one's not egregious, though, where I think Chad had four or five of them in the first round. This is just one or two. But anyways, with the 31st pick, he has the Chiefs taking Josh Simmons, offensive tackle from Ohio State. So he's right in his this is a guy that could go in the teens, was mocked in the teens early on, got injured during the season, but he's a guy that has the talent to be up, had the talent to be up in the teens. Here's his description, if you don't mind. Everyone saw the Eagles pass rushers demolish KC's O-line in the Super Bowl. Simmons had top 15 potential before a left knee injury cost him 10 games in 24. The three-year starter for Ohio State would challenge Jalen Moore on the left side, join the battle to replace left guard Joe Tooney, or prep for the future while working as a needed swing tackle.
So, Josh Simmons, his comp, according to our guy over at NFL Network, Lance Zierlein. You guys will enjoy this comp. This is a good comp.
Okay.
We can relate to it.
Is it going to be Orlando Brown Jr.?
No, close, though. You're close. You're on the right track.
Juwan Taylor, is it?
DJ Humphries.
He was a Pro Bowler.
If that's the career he has, that's great. That would be great, but just funny because we, of course, had the conversation about DJ Humphries for months. That's the comp. DJ Humphries. There's no good strengths or weaknesses from a line perspective. It just says he is, though. This is true. He's coming off a season-ending knee injury for Ohio State. So that's a little concerning for Josh Simmons. You're getting a guy that's coming off a knee.
I guess you don't need him to play day one, though. If you were taking a guy...
If he were healthy, he would go in the top 15, probably.
Wait, though, you know, I got to say...
No.
I think that's one of the biggest... Like, not you. I just think it's one of the biggest draft lies. I had to hear that about, like, Aaron Murray back in the day. Like, you know, if he had that ACL injury, he'd have been a second-round pick. I'm like, now he's a sixth? Nah, that's not how it works.
Trey Smith fell. He would have been a second or third rounder.
Major cardiac thing, not a traditional NFL injury.
Him and Will Campbell were the top two tackles in the class, and Campbell's going to get taken in the top 10 probably still. I think he would have been, if he was healthy, to start.
It goes on to say, very smooth getting out of his stance and into space. Rapid fire foot quickness gives him the ability to capture cutoff positioning.
I will say, every single mock draft Drew keeps sending our way, and I don't look at him until he gives us the mock draft sounder. Once those play, Membo from Missouri is going in the top 10.
A great
he might be picked ahead of Campbell now. Yeah,
he is going in every single, and he's a right tackle, but he's going in every single mock draft in the top 10 now.
Had an unbelievable combine.
And Luther Burden is hit or miss on if he's even in the first round.
Correct.
Like, and some people have him like 12, and some people have him like 40. And I don't understand. So like for Missouri guys, I got no sense of it. Here's the problem. Just 2 years ago, or you know, 2 years ago, they took FAU and he was a project player in the first round. It's a little soon. Be taking the project player in the first round again. They've done a pretty good job finding
valuable
starters.
If he's best player available, I guess.
I know.
At the time, we don't know if that'll be the case.
Two out of 3 years, we're gonna take project players in the first round because that's what he is. Like, could compete for the job at left guard or at left tackle. And look, it's not like I've never viewed it as a bad thing. Let's just say they signed him and they were immediately like, this guy's way better than Moore. That to me is not a bad thing. You didn't tie up so much money in Moore that it's bad.
Sure.
That the guy you took at the end of the first round, you're like, damn, that's our starting left tackle. Ooh, boy. Okay, cool. That's fine. No complaints here. That's cool. But that seems like the longest a long shot knowing the Chiefs history. I just don't, I don't know why everyone thinks they're taking an offensive lineman. I'm convinced they're taking an offensive lineman.
So yesterday I was on social, and BetMGM Network put out a clip. It's Odyssey's betting network. And one of their hosts, Ryan Horvat, was talking about the Chiefs draft.
I've been on his show.
Yeah, Ryan's a good dude. And he was talking about the Chiefs draft and some of the odds, and you can bet on what position is going to go in the first round, right? And he was making his case why he thought offensive line was the best bet. It was like minus 105 or minus 110. So that means there's some other positions that are plus money, like wide receiver or corner or defensive line. And he said he thinks that's the best bet, is the Chiefs to take an offensive lineman. And I listened to his reasoning, and he listed off the depth chart for the team and who the projected starters are. And he said, you know, Creed Humphrey at center and Trey Smith at right guard and Juwan Taylor at right tackle. And then he said, you know, they brought in Jalen Moore at left tackle. And then he said, at left guard is, you know, Mike Caliendo. And I was like, see, that's the confusion outside of KC. I'm not saying they won't draft a tackle or an offensive lineman, but
no, they might.
I wouldn't bet on it, I guess, is what I'm saying. Didn't even mention that, Kingsley, their first round pick last year, is likely to be competing, if not, you know, given that left guard spot.
So they have two people who could play left guard for them this year.
Yeah, and so I think people are looking at that and assuming they're going to take an offensive lineman because they know how bad. This is what every offseason discussion, and the Chiefs will have to prove people. It's weird for a team that won 15 games. They will have to prove people wrong again early on next season. I kind of already like how it's being built up because people are writing them off because of how awful the Super Bowl was, and they clearly got their ass kicked. We have gone way overboard, I think, nationally in particular, on acting like that was the entire team the whole year and that is where this organization is at and there's no getting out of it. And I think that is a massive overreaction.
I don't know
if they get back to the Super Bowl or not. I don't think they win 15 games. I'm not saying any of that. But
it didn't hold them back from accomplishing a lot.
That was not who the team was the entire season. Yes, O-line was a problem all year, but that was not the team all year. They wouldn't have made it to the Super Bowl if that was the team all year. And so I think people are assuming that like the offensive line, as bad as it was not the worst offensive line in football. And people are talking as if, oh my gosh, that same offensive line that was the worst in football. And that what we saw in the Super Bowl is what they were all year. No, that was not what they were all year. They have question marks there. And so
they had one of the best offensive lines, I think, in football in terms of pass and run win rate.
This is going to be the offseason narrative, and the Chiefs through the month of September are going to have an opportunity, and this will be fun, to prove to people again, oh yeah, whoops, we already wrote them off. What a mistake we made. I can promise you that's going to be some of the talking points that we will discuss in September, and we're seeing it from the national media already that they think that that's what the team just now is, and I think it's a mistake.
I do really think, though, that if let's say they don't take a guard, let's say they don't do offensive line until like the third round. If Kingsley stinks and it's a big problem, then we're going to look back on this and say they absolutely should have taken one again. They absolutely should have taken one.
They're going to take all offensive linemen, but the guys we're all talking about are all projects. Unless Kingsley, because I'll say, if they take a guard in the first round, then they are done with Kingsley. They might as well cut his ass.
The guy yesterday,
they might as well kick him off the roster.
Donovan Jackson, he could be very, very good, but he's a guard. Do you take a guard in the first round?
I would not.
Or do you, because if you take him.
I needed one to start tomorrow, yeah, sure.
Well, that's what I'm saying is if you take him, if they take Donovan Jackson, who's the guard from Ohio State, he's going to be the guy ahead of Kingsley who's going to get every single shot because he's a first round pick. Mm-hmm. If they wait and they take guard later,
it's normal competition. That's fine.
I know, but is it worth having a third rounder and a guy that failed at left tackle competing for a guard job?
Yes, that's a normal guard competition. That's what the Chiefs had at guard.
I know, but I'm saying if it fails and we're once again having this conversation 5 months from now of holy crap, the offensive line looks really bad.
Since his defense, though, like, right? I mean, we're having like a similar conversation where you're like, that'll just be better by attrition.
I understand, but you're not comparing to other teams when you're trying to get better yourself in your own building. And I think them being able to get better at the left spot, yes, they made it to the Super Bowl last year amidst all the problems. But why not try to make it better and not just say, well, we don't need to draft an offensive lineman because, you know, we still made it to the Super Bowl and just bank on that.
Not in the first round.
I think they
shouldn't draft one in the first round, but I will be stunned if across their, what is it now, 8 picks that they have, that they don't draft an offensive lineman at some point. You can always use O-line depth, always.
It is notable, too, in this mock that Walter Nolan was selected by the Eagles the pick after. Which, again, would be
another
outstanding pick by the Eagles. It makes the defense only even better.
I guess the way I view it is, like, with Trey, like, if they bring somebody in, is, like, it's generally speaking a good, like, that's not a bad way of finding a guard. If we were talking about quarterback, Drew, I think I probably agree. Finding a bad way to find a guard is not failed left tackle from last year goes against fourth round pick. That is exactly how they found Trey Smith. So, like, part of it is, like, he was in a camp battle with, was it Niang? Is that he was in a battle with
Trey Smith?
Who was
going
Trey
way
Smith
back?
In the battle? Some vet, some random vet. No, it wasn't Niang. Who was he in a battle with at right guard? Text line, I don't remember. 913-586-7965. He was in a battle with some, like, underperforming guard. He came in as a six. That guy got dinged up. Trey Smith never gave the job back away. And then he was the starting right guard. It's like an, it's a not crazy way to find a starting guard. That's all.
So I think it's interesting because last year, obviously they didn't take a tackle in the first round and they took Kingsley and everything like that. But this year there's more of a need maybe for defensive line, as we've talked about. But I think if I were the Chiefs, I would just be sick and tired of having to just put a Band-Aid over the position forever. Yes, it has worked, but we're at the point now where so Jalen Moore is going to be the guy. That's a 2-year contract, if I remember right. If he's okay really or it doesn't work out well, you're going to have to draft one next year anyways to try to.
But it's a bad year,
to get
right?
ahead of, that's what I'm saying is that it's like you're trying to continuously put the Band-Aid on, where if you can get somebody who you feel like in the first round can at least solidify the left side in general, help out the left tackle a little bit, where we don't know if Kingsley can do that at left guard, and let's say Jalen Moore struggles, that whole left side is going to be a problem. Why not draft the guy that you think is going to help your line out for the long term, where you don't have to address that position, period, in the future for the next 2, 3, 4 years?
It was after Kyle Long got hurt, who they had signed to a deal to play there. He then was expected to battle for the starting spot with LDT, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif.
The doctor.
And Trey Smith won. Like, it's not like, you know, like, Trey, like, LDT was not a failed tackle, in fairness. He was kind of meant to be, like, on that side. But, like, you know, I don't know. I get it, Drew. Like, that, but that's, like, the generalization you're making, I guess, is what you could say about almost anyone's offseason. It's just whether or not I like the plan. Because we could say, is paying, you know, like, T. Higgins and Jamar Chase the right decision. Well, if it doesn't work, then we're going to crush them.
Of course.
For it not being the right decision. I'm just saying, like, this is a pretty good way to go about guard. If they take a guy in the third round and they say, hey, you're in a battle with Kingsley. May the best man win. May the odds be ever in your favor, and good luck. I don't hate that strategy. I feel like that ends up being like a cream rises to the top situation. Well,
I'm with you guys. They need to draft a defensive lineman, I think, in the first round. It makes too much sense for them to get a high-quality guy.
If they want to draft a guard in the second round even, I'm cool with that. That's fine. But first round, right now, I would lean defensive line. Except as since they've brought in, you know, Pinnell, and they've brought back Charles Aminihue as well, since we last had this conversation, specifically the defensive line, I don't think there's the same urgency to spend the first round pick there. I do agree that they have a lot of flexibility now in round one to go attack us to any position. Like, if there is a surprise player that falls to them at 31, they never thought was going to be there. I wouldn't hate that. But if you were just right now talking positional preference, guard would not be one. It would not be two. It'd probably be 3 or 4 at least on my list.
Behind running back.
It would
back,
be behind.
D-line.
In the first round, it would be behind
defensive
tackle.
Round,
It'd be behind defensive tackle, offensive tackle. So, like, even a guy like Simmons.
I would argue.
Wide receiver,
I would even argue
corner.
For the first round, yes.
For the first round, it'd probably be like 5th. I don't know. It'd be ahead of running back, and it'd be ahead of linebacker and safety. But it would be below all the other important positions.
All right, coming up next, we'll get to what's trending here on the show and also discuss a little bit more about Vinny Pasquantino's hamstring strain and what the Royals are saying.